This is a production of Cornell University.
Time is now 4:47. I'm calling this student assembly meeting to order. Chelsea, if you could please call the roll.
Yes, we'll have to do that for us. Members. Oh my God. Sure.
Present.
Here.
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 Here. He's gonna. He should be here. He'll be late.
He's
here.
Where's Pete?
He's just gonna be a little bit late.
What? Really?
I'm not. I'm like 3 or 4 more than.
What? Oh, okay. So we are now going to move into approval of the minutes, the October 25th, 2012 minutes. Are there any motions on the floor?
Motion to approve.
It's been a motion to approve. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to move on to open microphone. So if there is anyone in the audience who's not already on the agenda who'd like to speak, feel free to just raise your hand now. Okay. Seeing none, we are going to move into a presentation by Tim Marshall, the Director of Mental Health Initiatives at Gannett, and John Keith, Senior Project Manager, who are here to speak about the Means Restriction Initiative at Cornell. So, yes, please.
Put this in some historical context to you. By means restriction, we're talking in particular about the current offenses that are around the campus area of bridges and the field mesh, which is in the process of being installed underneath them.
Right.
In the spring of 2010, as many of you are aware, 3 Cornell students died by suicide from jumping from bridges into Baltimore. In the aftermath of those tragedies, a thorough evaluation of the university's approach to suicide prevention was conducted and led to both increases in our clinical services at the medical centers, an expansion of our educational initiatives such as Friend to Friend to help students and staff and faculty who are responsible, helping all those individuals recognize and respond effectively to students or others who may be in emotional distress. But that evaluation also led to the recognition that part of the equation for our comprehensive approach to suicide prevention program needed to be to restrict access to the means, the most common means of dying by suicide among our students. And so after reviewing all of the options and the literature, which compellingly demonstrated that strategies such as restricting access to means of suicide in the case of bridges in particular leads to reduction in jumping deaths. We decided after that review that we would move forward with the installation of the mesh under the bridges. This was done with approval from the City of Ithaca, which owns 3 out of the 7 bridges. This has been a roughly two-year process that we've undertaken. We are at the phase that we're in right now is where we are beginning the installation of that steel mesh on the bridges. And with that, I'm going to let John describe to you where we are in Construction and design is a long process. That's probably why you're sitting here. It's actually 2010, and now we're almost 2013. What we got? So we went through a number of iterations with the city. The city had to approve all this stuff. We had to go through a design period approval. We usually go through about a year and a half. It's a very unique thing. There's very, very few of these type of net systems under bridges. There's some in Switzerland. I think there's one in Canada. And we're in the regular period in the United States. As a matter of fact, on the 15th of November, the Golden Gate Bridge Authority is going to come talk to us about what we're doing so they can perhaps do the same thing at the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, where they obviously have issues with suicide. So we put all this together, we did the design, we did out the design, and we had our low-bid contractor, who is a very qualified contractor, and then he's going to take that design and go a step further. So, for instance, if you're building a house, a designer is going to design a house, but he's not going to show you where the electrical wire is. He's not going to show you where the plumbing is going. So the contractor's got to do that. So he's going to take that process and get it approved by the designer, and that's why we've had this delay from about June to now when we're getting all these approvals. So the plan going forward is, I don't know if you can see it yet, but Stonehart does. They've got the system in place, the mesh system is there, moving there, the trolley, the Thurston, the Stewart Avenue bridges, and the BB Gambridge, and then the station. It's interesting during our investigation of how we're going to do this, and we discovered the BB Gambridge is actually sort of broken. So we've got to fix it first before it's easy. It saves a lot of cost. I'm a civil engineer, I'd say that. But we had some issues with the bearing plate, so we've got to actually repair that first before we put the systems on the BB Gambridge. So that's a delay. Then there's the issue that the net systems are actually manufactured in Switzerland. Then they go to Germany for a coating, come back to Switzerland, and then they go set that up. The thermal cameras that are on the bridges, they're manufactured in Switzerland. Switzerland has been up on that, and then they get set up. There's some delays in the service right now. And the reason we haven't taken down any of the fences on Stonehart is because of the fact that we don't have thermal cameras yet. They're only going to be here in about 2 weeks. And the idea is we put thermal cameras looking at the net, and what that will say is it will send an alarm to Fort Hill Police that something bigger than a squirrel's in the net. So if he falls in, if he jumps in, we report that and we respond to it. So this is life safety. So we're not going to take fences down until all the life safety issues are really safe. So that's the story where we are. We're looking at the city. 8th of December, beginning of January. And we think we're still waiting for the
safety. So, I'd like to add to these comments that if it wasn't clear from what we described, the mesh systems, once they're in place underneath, the fences above them will come down. So the black fences that you currently see on the bridges will come down and downtown correct or come not all at once, but incrementally that add each bridge is ready. Okay. And part of the reason why it was decided to have the systems underneath the bridges is so that the systems could be reopened and that we could all enjoy the beauty of the natural wonders that we have in our community. And we know that in terms of mental health, that enjoying the natural environment has restorative psychological benefits. And so we're really trying to think both about making the views from the gorges accessible and also promoting other experiences on campus for students to experience the natural environment.
Thank you. I'm going to open it up to a couple questions from the essay. I should have said this in the introduction, but Tim has been working with the essay on, you know, a whole number of initiatives from health, from alcohol initiatives, from mental health initiatives, sexual assault. So we really thank you for continuing to work with the essay, and we appreciate that you're here today.
Let me just echo back to you and all of you here how grateful we are for the partnership that we've had throughout the University Administration. We're very grateful for the leadership that you've all provided on health and well-being.
Thank you. First question is to Representative Kerr.
I want to thank you for coming here and supporting us. It's great to see so much progress that's been done since we were first talking about this in the 70s over 35 years ago. I was wondering if you have a plan to sort of the next step forward, right? Education plans for students, rules regulating the next plan for students who somehow use it.
John, just for newer students and just for people who may not know, which is the Stone Arch Bridge on campus?
Stone Arch is the college at Santa Fe.
Okay.
That area.
Is that, and that's the one that goes to the engineering quad or up to Hope Plaza?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
The car.
Got it.
It's the only difference, a lot different because it's called a track index, so I shouldn't use the word net. The beauty of the word net is sort of bad because net people, a lot of cases, say, well, it's safe. It's all into it. It's going to hold you. These are stainless steel mesh systems, 3 millimeter wire, spaced at 140 millimeters or about 5.5 inches. So, it's going to hurt.
Next question is from Representative Block. EVP Mueller.
Hi, Tim. Hi, John. Thanks again for coming. Now, as you know, Tim, I've been pretty much on board with this from the very beginning, but I wanted to give you a chance to highlight the responses to some of the negative aspects that people talk about. If you could talk a little bit about the research on the displacement effect of the nets, and as well as the other sort of hidden convenience restriction that already exists on campus, and lastly, I'm losing it, but I'll give you a chance to know as well if I think I can come back quick.
So, means restriction, broadly speaking, is one of the central components of any comprehensive approach to suicide prevention, and there is considerable evidence that restricting access to firearms, restricting access to chemicals, things of this nature have been shown to reduce suicide, because when individuals make a suicide attempt, it's often when they are at the moment of their deepest despair, which is time limited and which is often fleeting. Now, there are certainly individuals who are more determined to die by suicide, and we can't guarantee that we can prevent every suicide. But by having the ability to restrict access to highly lethal means of attempting suicide, you can buy time, you can put distance between individuals and access to lethal means, and in doing so, give the opportunity, give time for the suicidal impulse to pass, because many times suicidal acts have an impulsive dimension. And when we look at the data, we know that well over 90% of individuals who attempt suicide do not go on to kill themselves later, which is some of the evidence of this fleeting nature of suicide and the challenges this sometimes misguided belief that people are suicidal, there's nothing you can do to stop them, that they're going to kill themselves. And so that when you
have a restricted access to something like jumping. There is evidence that we do scope for jumps, that there is some evidence that, well, there's always potential for some displacement. The larger supporting evidence is that people are likely to not go on and kill themselves. And because of the intimidated nature of suicide, it's really important to reduce experiences or episodes of very public suicide. Because that can foster a suicide temptation where you see people engaging in imitative behavior. And when we saw three jumping suicides in 1 month, we were advised by the authorities that this was essentially a psychological
And actually, last part answered the last piece that I thought of, which was talking about the cluster effect and why means restriction on such a public means of suicide is so important. And so thank you. We're good.
The last question is from Representative Marshall. Okay. Rep. Lee. Did you have a question?
I was wondering why we have to mention the result mostly because if it is 50 feet behind you, the speed is about 85 miles per hour, and you can see the exact amount of distance. So if you stop that, it is a because they are not going to be using it, it is awesome.
I think the main reason is you want something to last. If you do a softer rope neck, you're replacing it in 3 years. So the mesh systems that are set up are coated in paint, and they're going to last 25 years. So they're going to go with stainless steel, they've got a specific coating on them, they're going to get dirty. Your feet are going to be dirty sometimes. But it's something that's going to be low maintenance, and if you look at the systems that are set up in Switzerland, there's actually no one in the industry. And they're out there, and one of the last ones are all pretty sure.
To add to that, and underscore that, in all the years of these, mesh installations have been in place in Switzerland, they've had no one even attempt. No one there in the practice, no one or no suicide attempts in any of these bridges. But the other thing, one of the other benefits to this tensile steel mesh system is transparency. That when you're standing looking at the gorge, it blends in visually to the background, and so it's aesthetically an advantage as well.
We have one last question. Okay, and the question was answered. So thank you very much for coming. We really appreciated.
I got one final statement.
Sure.
And the reason is it's interesting. I'm a project manager. I'm an engineer. I can assign various buildings and stuff. And I got assignments. This is my kit. But I carry a pager. I'm a first responder. I'm an officer of the Guilford Firefighters. I run a rope rescue team through. I've seen and experienced suicide and get calls. And it's not fun. And I put our people at risk to recover or rescue these people, and it's a risk for us. And I think, I've become very passionate about this project just for that reason. It's unusual that I got excited. But, we're doing the right thing. We really are doing the right thing. Prevent this impulse. It's become a passion for me. I'm a project manager, and I really believe in it. I really believe in what Tim said. I just don't believe in that, but I have experienced this person.
Thank you very much for sharing that. And if anyone has more questions for Tim or John after, we will give you Tim's contact information. Moving on in the agenda to announcements and reports. The first is an AAP announcement by VP Smith. While he's getting ready, we'll move on to a TCAT announcement by Representative Lovely.
Hi, you guys have a
trying to figure out how to use that. And what do the Cornell presentations represented in the science of how somebody actually would do that. And I started to work with some other members of the we're actually doing that on Tuesday. If you guys are interested in talking about it. Basically, as it stands right now, I found out why he has such a good bug and it was on all the bug out. It's basically a practicality thing. They only have one person servicing every single bug out they have, which is over 300. And they can only put a check because it's not so easy to do it. And since that they're working on a long-term project, so I want to possibly innovate technology, something that's going to go for discuss and some of the tasks that we. But as of right now, there's no short-term solution to this. But I think that I have definitely made the case for putting bug bounties in places where people don't just use them, where the type of people that use them come to the play. Right now, there's no schedule that can stop it from existing. RPCs, the physical kind of building, there's all, which only implement an impression of their own use stops. And I think that so
great, thanks. And I'd recommend reaching out, if you haven't already, to the GPSA president, Mitch Payne. Okay, great. Perfect. Next is a Ivy Council announcement. But just before the Ivy Council announcement, I'd just like to congratulate EVP Mueller on being accepted 2 seconds ago to Teach for America. Next is an Ivy Council announcement by Representative Pritchett.
But the Ivy Council 2012 Leadership Summit at Dartmouth College is 1 weekend from this Friday, November 19th, and it's a fantastic opportunity to work with the students at Dartmouth schools, to be able to do the
Okay, thank you. And also we're going to be cutting, we have a lot on the agenda today, so we're going to be cutting down sort of an announcement time, so if you could all just make them brief, that would be great. Next is an AAP announcement and then a diversity announcement by VP Smith.
So, let's start with AAP. So, sorry, I'm doing my Roman divisions. If you get our Roman divisions, thanks for coming back. But I met with Jim Kleinman on Tuesday. But we basically ended up discussing a lot of the same issues in addition to the actual creation of the diversity committee on there, or in AAP. So I'll segue to the diversity announcement right there, because it's more important. The email has been sent out to all of the college associates in order to start the staffing process for our for the new coalition. I've already gotten responses from AAP naturally. And in addition to the hotel school and a couple other people who I can't remember right now. So there are people that are interested and are ready. These are staff members and to do this also. In addition, on November 7th, I'll send this out also, but on November 7th at 5:37, I think, the organization Cornell Planners is putting on a program called How to Facilitate Public Meetings, Community Meetings. And I just think that would be so beneficial for all of us to go to. So I will send it to Vice President Gitlin, hoping that it will be an outreach event of some sort so you all can go and attend. I've also completed the training program for diversity. It's great. It's lovely. And I'll give you some notes on that later because we're trying to get
New York.
Great.
So that was the diversity announcement? Okay. Next is outreach tracker announcement.
So yesterday was the last day to fill out the outreach tracker for October. So if you did not fill it out, tomorrow you can get the notification from Melissa when you use the TNAP. There we go.
Okay. And appropriations committee announcement.
Next week we will be seeing class councils. Yeah, we'll also be talking about the special projects or changes to the special project funding process by the student. Oh, and Haven, sorry for a second. Haven from class council.
We next is a Greek tri-council announcement by Liaison Toledo.
I think that's just brief. So as far as the Greek councils go, all three councils have either completed or are in the process of completing their elections for our then academic education next calendar year council, second quarter. That should all be wrapping up in the next 2 weeks to allow for transition to the next 2 weeks to get to. And on behalf of the tri-council, I want to thank to the members of the GSA for their efforts in moving tonight. All three councils were co-sponsoring organizations and it was great councils every time. The two vacant associate positions of the Greek office are currently in the process of being filled. The NDOP is there to have two candidates, and as far as the funding I'm sure to go, I'm not too sure about that one, but there are both positions that should be filled by next semester, hopefully. And just one last thing. For those of you who aren't aware, it's no secret that aging and misbehavior is a big issue with the Greek community at the current time. And I just wanted to let everyone know that we are actively working on addressing the issue, not just mitigating when it happens, but just preventing it. And for those of you who aren't aware, a committee was formed between members of the Greek office, Greek Tri-Council, and administration and alumni. And it's called Improvement, Acceptance, Transition, and Education for RARE Report. And it proposed a number of recommendations based on our research to the Fraternity Sorority Advisory Council and also to the trustees. And they're moving forward with those recommendations, and the ones that will be implemented will start being implemented in a very elongated process to allow for a good transition. And a big takeaway that I would like to leave off with is that for those of you who are in the Greek House of Speaking, I would suggest that you reach out to your chapter leadership to try to get more alumni engagement, not only through things like going to the newsletter, but to actually have them be a part in the operations and induction for all of the chapters. And if you guys have any questions regarding anything that I'm not related, just let me know and I can talk to you about that. Thank you.
Thanks. Next is an update by Rep. Chopra.
So I will be meeting with from the class next Wednesday. I just want to say that if you have an email, you can bring up the email.
Thank you. If you could also email that around, that'd be great, just so. VP Luke Shevitz.
Two quick announcements. There are two committees on the UA that still need undergraduates to be staffed on them, the Campus Infrastructure Committee and the Campus Welfare Committee. It could be members of the SA or other undergraduates that you think might be interested. If you have any questions about what those committees focus on, let me know. I'm just not going to go through it right now. And then the other announcement, kind of going off of what Nisha said, I'm meeting with the Dean of Faculty on, I believe it's Tuesday, so let me know if there's anything that you would like me to bring in.
Thanks. And then one other quick announcement. I was reached out to today about someone who wants to organize a large benefit concert, potentially in the Bears Den, to raise funds for relief efforts for Sandy, Hurricane Sandy. I don't know. I don't think the SA will be too involved in this, but just wanted to give everyone a heads up about it. And if you are interested in potentially helping out with like outreach, you know, for them, feel free to let me know after the meeting. And then the last announcement is a PR strategy report announcement.
Roll Tide, John, you're going to get the back. So attached to you guys' agenda is the, like, this is basically like a draft of a report for like revamping public relations, which I think like it was a spark, kind of like an initiative based on feedback like that. And we really want to put like energy and youth engagement, not just from the outreach perspective, but also from the public relations perspective. So there's two parts. The first part is about like forming a strategy for PR. And then the second part is about the student engagement. And the big thing that I'm really excited about is like this Facebook campaign. We actually, I got to do this revisit, and we're going to shoot for 3,000 Facebook likes by the end of November. It's going to be awesome. And I'm really, really excited about it. But most importantly, I really want to get feedback from you guys. So if there's any interest that you guys have at all about the resolution, the report, please let me know. I'm more than happy to send out to you guys an email. Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, I'd definitely take a good look at this. This is potential to be a new way for the SA to reach out to the community and get perspectives. So I know it was just like a 30-second announcement, but Steven's been working hard on it, and it could, you know, really set the precedent moving forward about engaging the student body. So definitely give it a good read. And then last, sorry, is the UA announcement. Did you have one?
So, JA, Mayor Deverance, came to the UA this past Tuesday, and she just came up with a few initiatives that she's looking for undergraduates to assist with. So I'll be bringing that to the assembly in a few weeks regarding the organization. That was like the big topic that she wanted our input with. And I have a meeting with Chief Stoner on Monday discussing our state, our weekly safety emails that we've been receiving from her and the new safety cultures that we're fostering here at Cornell.
Great. Thanks. We're going to move on to business of the day. To Appropriations Committee's report, VP Desai.
So the first group that we reviewed this week was athletics and outdoor education. So I'm going to do them first. So for those of you guys who don't know, we fund them $10 for the student activity, and that basically gives most students, or gives every undergraduate student the right to attend non-hockey athletic games for free on campus. That's via something called the Big Red Sports Pass, which all, every student has access to. For the most part, I would say that athletics and physical education has been one of the easier, quote-unquote, groups that the Appropriations Committee has seen over the last few bi-month budget cycles. They kind of have for free. We all understand this is important. They have value on campus. Here's your money. You know, thank you for helping out students. So out of the $10 that we fund them, $7 goes towards actually the actual Big Red Sports Pass, and $3 is for marketing. And I think what the committee was able to do during this non-byline funding year was take a really in-depth look at the breakdown for the marketing budget to figure out ways that they could better reach out to undergraduate students on campus. You can read the report, but you know, examples of things like that were $12,000 on radio advertising was deemed to be pretty inefficient as opposed to online sources of media, which was very strongly pushed for, by people like Representative Chopra, who obliged to help them out with stuff like that. Representative or Director of Elections Weinberg is our liaison to the athletics department, so he's going to be following up with them and making sure that some of these get implemented. But that was the basic breakdown from them. So in my opinion, a very productive meeting that is helping a group that hasn't really had a lot of essay interaction in the past. The next group is Outdoor Odyssey. So this was an interesting group because last year the Appropriations Committee recommended that they get a decrease in funding with the intent for them to eventually be pulled out of the student activity fee process. The mindset of the committee last year was that Outdoor Odyssey did not fulfill the requirements of a byline-funded organization in that primarily they did not serve or benefit the entire undergraduate Cornell community, and also the requirement that they allow all students equal access to services and or participation. Both of those have to be met in order to be deemed a byline-funding eligible organization under Appendix A. So last year, appropriations committee deemed that they note that they did not meet these requirements. That was passed on to the student assembly, and the student assembly voted to overturn that appropriations committee decision and continue them along. So they met with the appropriations committee this year, and the committee came up with basically the same outcome. An overwhelming majority of the committee felt that Outdoor Odyssey did not meet these requirements, and there were a number of reasons why. Primarily this year also, I think the committee worked a lot more towards developing a proposal that would make Outdoor Odyssey self-sustaining. Examples of this were the fact that Outdoor Odyssey currently completely subsidizes a service component of their trip. So if you do a service trip instead of just the normal Outdoor Odyssey trip, you go for free. We didn't feel that that was very effective because, you know, students are currently paying to do trips like Post, which is held literally during the exact same day, and costs the same amount as Outdoor Odyssey. So eliminating that service trip in itself would take care of over half of the current SA subsidy for Outdoor Odyssey. We then made recommendations to cut out the rest of them, which you can read in the report. You know, that being said, as you guys know, the Appropriations Committee does not decide allocation decisions this year. We only make recommendations to the group and provide a report for the Appropriations Committee to read next year. So along with this report is recommendations to the committee from me on how I think they could address these issues. I guess one more thing I do want to talk about very briefly is the served or equal access argument. Is technically, yes, any undergraduate can sign up to do Outdoor Odyssey, but because they aren't able to really get in touch with all freshmen electronically, the two main ways that they do advertise is during Cornell Days and via Facebook. And basically what we see is that because, you know, coming to Cornell Days is expensive and it's cheaper if you're closer to New York, it mostly tends to be a Northeast population that gets access to that. There's almost no showing from international students or students from the West Coast or the southern areas of the United States. So that was the equal access thing. So again, like we do have a year before they come back and apply for byline funding and have to sit in front of the assembly again. And I know a lot of you guys, you know, have either worked with this group or have maybe been a part of it or, you know, in general care and voiced strong opinions last year. So I would urge you to, you know, get involved, talk to myself, who's going to be meeting with them to discuss this report, and take an active role if you do think that they should be byline funded and explain why that isn't helping them get there, or if, more importantly, if you think that they shouldn't be, helping them to be self-sustaining after they, you know, cease to get student activity fund fees, if that is the outcome of next year's decision. So I know there's a couple of hands, so I'm going to turn it back over to President Gitlin.
Thanks. Rep. Kerr.
I know last year they didn't respond well, and a lot of us recommended that they get the student subsidy for the students who stayed in the summer to do the grant, because to at least my knowledge, we only found other organizations that pay students to a leadership position. Correct me if I'm wrong. How did they respond to that this year? Did it seem a little more accepting of that recommendation, even though that was something that we had very strong opinions on last year's meeting?
So they fund two students to work every summer at $4,000 a piece, full salary for the summer. To be honest, that actually wasn't a point of discussion for a very extensive period of time on the committee. There were some committee members that felt that that was very high. There were some committee members who felt that it was accurate. I listed in the report that that was one area of recommendation that they could cut down, but it would be very easy for them to replace the student activity fee subsidy without even touching that amount based on the other recommendations that we provided.
Jeff.
So, I took out one question I have. I think it's not fair to put the two graphic data in the report right now, maybe because we, the appropriations committee, never received any data about the demographics, but we made a logical argument that because some of the neighborhoods in the Northeast, that logically would be harder for people on the Northeast to come, but that's just an assertion that we have. I don't think the data is back-to-side demographics, and we don't see any demographic data. So I just think that that's something that's directly important in the report as a fact. And I'd also say that I think that the argument of access is something that we use for something like the Outdoor Odyssey, and not something that we use for all sorts of things. I mean, look at, you know, outbound hearing aids, 200 students, small number of people who are looking at the actual that's just about it. I don't think we're going to do that around the property.
So to clarify for the room, the reason why I included that was because a member of the Appropriations Committee asked that question during the hearing, and a member of Outdoor Odyssey confirmed that they suspected that they were not able to reach students outside of the Northeast as well as students in other geographical areas. So that was the rationale behind including that as verifiable information within the Appropriations Committee report. And that is also available in the minutes, which all Appropriations Committee members have access to, including yourself, Representative Bowen.
Rep. Lovely.
I did have a question, and just to back up, I know some of you just have to be the ones who did it, and they loved it, it made the transition a lot easier. I know this is arguing that I was going to just buy good service, but it's just arguing for getting rid of the next-to-duty subsidy. But I know for everybody who did it, it was very positive. It's going to be a lot of things easier for them. Possibly for the mental health. Two of my best friends here were on my office, and that's really a lot of people.
Yeah, so this is an important distinction that we made both during discussion and I want to make now. In no way, shape, or form is this a recommendation to end Outdoor Odyssey. In fact, we praise very much both their organizational leadership, their operational structure, and the impact they make on the Cornell community. In the report, the discussion is on whether they deserve, whether they meet the criteria for byline funding stipulated in Appendix A, which is a very different discussion than are you a well-run group that services students, because if that were the case, then there would be hundreds of organizations that would be byline funded. So I just wanted to clarify for the room that we are not saying that we want to end Outdoor Odyssey or that we think they're a bad organization. We are saying that we don't think they meet the Appropriations Committee voted and made the statement that they do not meet the requirements for byline funding set out in Appendix A, and that they should be moved to a state where they are self-sustainable and do not need byline funding.
VP Smith.
I don't really think we should be arguing about whether or not Outdoor Odyssey should be made right now, because that's not really before us. But that's for the future. That's really talking about accessibility and things of that nature and how open they are. There's been a lot of conversations regarding athletics in recent years about its exemption from a lot of guidelines, general rules for accessibility, for accessing for certain groups and things like that. So particularly talking about LGBT individuals with other abilities. So I think that's something that should probably be investigated a little bit further. And I would have loved to see that conversation kind of get taken with the court, because I'm not sure the specifics, but I just thought that'd be interesting.
I would recommend to you to call the family myself, so that as I said earlier, you really want to go through the liaison to the athletic department. I think he has a meeting with them coming up in the next week or two, so that's something to bring to
Who's next week? Haven
and Class Councils.
Okay. VP Breeden.
I just wanted to clarify one of the points that you brought up about the geographic aspect of this market. It's not just so that people in the Northeast might be more willing to attend Cornell. They are also people who have more income and also people who are international as well. So it wasn't just the geographic argument, because I think what was mentioned that was they don't have. I think that is very, very important to acknowledge as well. I think also in the report at the bottom, because overall the Appropriations Committee does not want to see Outdoor Odyssey continue to operate, does help every month. I respect that statement. But I really want to make that expectation that it's on multiple levels that we're honing in on the bargaining ability of the Outdoor Odyssey.
So So we're going to move on in the agenda. Just to remind everyone, earlier VP Desai announced the organizations that the Appropriations Committee is going to be reviewing next week. That's Haven and Class Councils. If people do have questions about these organizations in the coming week, definitely approach Ramil or other members of the Appropriations Committee. There's a reason he makes that announcement, so you can get some of those questions in for the hearing. Moving on, Resolution 14, Late Night Safety Survey. Do you guys want to explain exactly what has changed between last version and this version? First is VP Smith.
Martin and Eric are not on the institutional review committee, and are you Oh,
okay. So, you know, we started to reach out to them, we got them, you know, in the middle of that thing, and just asked them to find out what was their argument.
But
if
you
have a
good
Next is Representative Bracey.
Hi, I just wanted to kind of question you have seen. It doesn't really seem to make much sense to kind of ask. We can take the end of the event building for activity monitors for the ones that I've gotten to know. I think it should be either two separate questions or you will be actual. So just to
All right, next. Did you want to say something or move on? Okay. Rep. Marshall. VP Desai.
All right. Thank you, guys. I wanted to echo some of Vice President Smith's sentiments. In general, I do think the survey is a little long, especially for the demographic that you're trying to get a response from. Have you guys talked at all with any of the disciplining sampling professors in IOR? Because they design these things for a living, and they might be able to help with wording and structure. I think Professor Carnes is one who's very accessible and would be willing to help. She also might be able to help you out in terms of addressing sampling bias that you would get in responses, which I think is really important. I know that many of the SA members here are in conjunction with the Leadership Roundtable doing the Blue Light Petition, and I don't know if you guys have considered attaching the petition with this survey, also considering the ramifications that would have in terms of bias and whether or not that would incentivize certain types of answers, I don't know, but I just want to know if you guys have considered that or looked into it at all.
I'm not sure if this came up on the meeting company that I wasn't able to make, but we were thinking about using some sort of incentive system, maybe every campaign to get some sort of gift certificate to the final number. So we're thinking about some ways that we can get some people to answer the problem.
And as far as this, leadership round, I think those are the ones that have actually been some who help us design some discussions about the food made in trouble. There'll be a resolution about that in the future. There's three agencies who are working with us to help us decide to do the things that we should do.
Next is Rep. Iwaoka.
So, question number two, the donut of the
Rep. Kerr. These are just suggestions for the next time it comes up.
I just wanted to say, if you don't have to work on the survey, if you want to work with me and Pam, when you take classes on the survey design, I'm glad to sit down with you. Also, you are a critical manager, which is great. If you do it through Cornell, they might get to link all the demographic data already. So we won't get the raw data, but process it and then give it to the report because we don't have access to that, to some of the private information that comes with students like NetEd who use student IDs. But they generally like to work with us, and so you might be able to eliminate some of the questions about the survey. I did have one quick suggestion for question 17. You say does Quail have sufficient video surveillance? I would say that do you feel that Quail has sufficient video surveillance? Just because you're asking a very funny answer.
So we have a couple more speakers, but I will be cutting this off in a couple minutes. And if you do have suggestions, please email the four of them individually. Mike. Okay. Rep Bonatti.
My question was on 37.
Brett Muir.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just to echo Renil's question, rather Vice President Simon's last question, about the like skew data. I imagine you're going to skew data. I don't know if that's happening or not, but how do you, because I imagine that using the data to skew or skew notes from which people who tend to walk home late at night, how do you kind of monitor from that and then
All right. Thank you very much. Again, if you could email around this document and get comments, that'd be great. We're going to move on in the agenda to Resolution 18, Improvement of Student Assembly Voting Procedures.
Because there's no reason for it. Like, we were upset at the meeting and made it in the session. And,
oh, there's not.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we're bringing back. We first looked at this 2 weeks ago, and all we have is the idea of all the saying that we want to change the rules for the children who are pregnant. We have numerous things that we love. So you have those to executive session, amendments to the bylaws, you know, how the committee action, recalling committee members, suspending standing rules, and appropriation decisions within a specific range. So those are the ones we're going to change. None of these are changes to the charter. There are bylaws, standing rules, and special rules in order. And so we're happy to take your questions on
that. All right, going to open up the speakers list. First on it is UP Desai.
Thank you guys for coming to present. So I'm going to speak very candidly about this, and you know, feel free to disagree with me. But in my experiences as 4 years as an SA member, having spent now my fourth year on the Appropriations Committee, specifically as the head of the Finance Task Force and as the Vice President of Finance, I think that this resolution would destroy the integrity and credibility of the bylaw funding process, to the extent that we would no longer be able to do our job in correctly allocating the student activity fee to students on campus. And there are a couple of reasons why. So first, if you guys could label the be it therefore resolved clauses, because I'm going to speak to them in numbered relation. So first of all, the third be it therefore resolved clause.
You have 20 seconds.
All right, and I'm probably going to go over time. So
there's a motion to extend. Okay.
Yeah, the first be it therefore resolved, I'm counting as one, and everything after is 2, 3, 4. So number three, referring to Article 11, technically if this were implemented right now, it wouldn't go into effect because it conflicts with it conflicts with the charter under Appendix A, Section 4, because this basically says, oh, sorry, no, wrong article. So this article, the reason I'm going to motion to strike it is because it would make it so that we could abstain on an amendment to the bylaws, which basically means if you're abstaining, you have no opinion on how we should be internally run and operated as an assembly. I don't think that it's possible to be neutral on how we operate. I think if you don't have an opinion on how we operate, you're not doing your job as a representative and someone who's partaking in the operations of this assembly. By definition, if I'm striking that, I have to strike the first "be it therefore resolved" clause, because that applies to all of them. So I'm so far stricken 1 and 3. Number 4 is the one that I am the most against. So number 4 would make it so that you would be able to abstain on overturning a committee decision on this is in conflict with the Charter Appendix A, Section 4, which states that all votes affecting the student activity fee process have to be approved by a two-thirds majority. Because the Charter supersedes the bylaws, this wouldn't go into effect, but I don't think we should pass it just because it's not going to go into effect. So, your "be it therefore resolved" clause says that should a committee act unilaterally, blah, 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 you would vote by the statement you have provided instead of voting by members present. That conflicts with the Charter Appendix A, Section 4, which states that all byline funding, or all SAF votes have to be approved by members present. Since byline funded votes are recommendations by the Appropriations Committee, your resolution conflicts with the Charter, and since the Charter supersedes the bylaws, this clause would not go into effect. By definition, that would
be... I believe that if the Charter is more specific than general rule bylaws, it applies in that instance and not overturning the bylaws in its entirety.
I'm going to defer that to Parliamentarian Santangelo.
So I'm gonna finish my statement. If it's all right with you, you can make a point of distinction of the chair afterwards.
And the only reason that I'm not, just for everyone's knowledge, the only reason I'm not cutting him off right now is because he's technically making a motion, which means he has to finish to strike, which means he has to finish his motion. Otherwise, I would be cutting him off.
I'm very much enjoying that speech.
What?
I'm very much enjoying the speech. I
would want
to turn
off. Okay.
So, regardless of whether or not that ends up being correct, maybe I misinterpreted the Charter, as Trustee Boras pointed out, I still think that making it so that student members of this assembly would be able to abstain their opinion from a byline funding vote, or really any vote that has to come from the Appropriations Committee, like I said earlier, is going to be attacking the integrity of what we do. And the reason for that is I know that we will all like to think that every SA member that is ever elected is perfect and is going to speak their mind freely at a meeting and never feel uncomfortable, you know, going against the public whim when it comes to a funding decision. But I can say, like, from experience, that one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do is sit in front of Cornell Cinema when they pack the room and attack the Appropriations Committee decisions that we made to cut them down. And I can say with no reservations that the reason that we voted to give them money was not because we felt that they deserved money, but because of that public pressure. And I think by throwing in this exception to make you able to abstain on any decision of funding that comes from the Appropriations Committee is giving you an opportunity to not have to make that decision. And I personally think that as an elected representative, it is your job to make that decision, to voice that opinion, and to represent your constituency. And I honestly don't think that it's possible to be completely neutral on an opinion like that, because if you really are absolutely 100% neutral, then you can vote in what the opinion is that you think your constituents hold, and there's no way that the absolute mean of your constituents is completely normal. I don't want to talk anymore, but I am motioning to strike section, or "be it therefore resolved" clauses 1, 3, 4, 6, and 7.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
One, three, four, six.
Can you show me this? 1, 3, right?
One. Yep. 1, 3, 4, 5, 4, 6, 7, 11.
And if we can get a moment to respond, I appreciate you moment to extend, though I think it would be worth it.
You're going to turn into Candy Crowley, yeah.
Hold on 1 second. All right. Yeah.
Wait, can you hear me? We have a moment to respond.
I can get me a visa.
Yes. There's a motion there's a motion to strike 1, 3, 4, 6, and 7. Is there any second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? Oh, okay. Well, okay, so we're opening up the speakers list on this motion, and I'll put you guys first on.
Thank you. You're a good buddy of mine. I appreciate all the work you've done for the SA. I find it a little bit disturbing, the fact that the SA has discussed the rights of LGBTQ people and diverse communities and citizen people and all of the really important issues on campus. But the voting procedure is the one we're most passionate about. But that said, we'll go through those arguments this way. I absolutely agree with you that we should have strong voting on the SA, where all of those votes reflect how people actually feel and how people are informed. I agree with you 100% on that front. But I think that how we get to the point where people are not seeing on important votes is to educate them, is to continue to encourage them to be involved, and it's not to allow an extension that actually in those votes. So I don't think that this provision as it is now is discouraging anyone from not knowing things as it exists now, and we're asserting that some people don't know things and actually don't have an opinion. All of those mean that all of those who don't fulfill their responsibility to know things now vote no. Which means that the votes that we state as an SA do not actually reflect people's true opinions. So that concern about people not knowing things is built into this resolution. Because it's more than 50% of saying that we don't get 14 votes on this and people are expressing either have opinion, it gets taken in the next meeting so that people can have an opinion and can inform them. So I absolutely agree with the premise of your argument, and I fundamentally disagree with that. Rejecting this motion is the way you accomplish it, and keeping the status quo is the way you get that change. Second of all, I just see degrading the integrity of the bylaw process. Bylaws are only being written in the charter, and we haven't changed the language to actually do that. So I appreciate you looking these things up, but bylaw funding specifically is not actually affected by this. So I'm not going to clarify that. And then lastly, I think the point of this motion is to ensure the integrity of elections. There are going to be cases where people do need to go to state when it's an appropriations committee decision on their club, or when there's some other meeting that has a conflict of interest, or can't wait to even know about things. This allows for those new instances, but I think secondly, and more importantly, get rid of the perception problem that people are seeing to hide their votes and not actually express how they truly feel. And so I agree that there may be some issues with this resolution. No resolution is perfect. I agree that the fact that it allows for a true extension on votes, just like we have on all of the votes, on all of the voting votes, and the fact that it gets rid of that perception problem of the SA means that it is actually improving our law towards the problem of voting
So we're going to move on again to 1 minute speaking time. First, on this, we're now, again, we're in the motion right now. Parliamentarian Santangelo.
I have a quick question. This doesn't have anything that says anything about the Latino community in it. That was one thing that I didn't know if you were trying to express that as one of them, or if that was just completely left out.
Yeah, so that was included in the charter, and we haven't put anything in the
charter. And that's what affects my life, basically.
Next is Rep. Kerr.
Just a point of clarification. So this wouldn't affect anything that changes the charter, and would it affect changes to the standing rules or standing rules and bylaws?
Yeah. So all the things that are going to change the charter, and all the things that are going to change the charter, all the things that are going to change the standing rules.
VP Desai, now on the motion, please keep it short.
So,
Again, my clarification is I know that you have left out the charter, but because you are targeting what committee recommendations are and we have to vote to, yes, technically this would not affect the vote to approve the committee recommendation, but this would affect the two-thirds vote to overturn the committee recommendation, which is why I didn't get affected by line funding. So for example, if we were overturning the Outdoor Odyssey recommendation, this would affect that vote, and I think that that type of vote is not something that students should be able to abstain from. So above all, I think the fourth be it therefore resolved, this is the most important one that should be stricken from the rules. And again, I would just like to reiterate.
It's struck. Okay. Wait, what? Oh, okay.
What? Thank you for the clarification, trustee board. And
I know the right word.
What?
Continue.
And I appreciate your sentiments regarding what you think that I am the most passionate about, but again, this is, I spoke up about this not because I think it's more important than, say, LGBTQ issues, the resolution which I was a sponsor of, but because I think people are the most informed about this. And I don't think that altering the incentive structure by doing this is taking a step forward. I think it's taking a step back. I think that the proper thing to do in this situation is to remove the ability to abstain, which I think is what you were hinting at. But I don't think that this is a necessary step towards making that change. I think we should just propose a resolution that makes that change.
Rep. Bonatti.
So, I have a question for Daniel about this quote about the government in general.
Sure. So there's nothing in one of the trustees that requires two-thirds vote, so it doesn't come up. And I think one of the main issues to this was standardizing it amongst what we already did on the charter votes. So I think it's good work that attention is actually coming out of the two-thirds
vote. Do either of you want to speak on this one?
Does anyone else want to on the speaker's list for the amendment? There's no one else. I'm opening up the second speaker's list. And can all the sign conversations stop, please? Seriously, there are way too many going on here. Yeah.
Just a few things. First is we're not actually changing the ability to overturn. It still requires a good time when we go to the forum. I understand the ability to abstain. And if you think that on specific things, there shouldn't be a ability to abstain, I would love for the two of you to get together and bring that motion later. But with, as it is right now, you can abstain, and people who abstain often, not always, often, but are either trying to hide their vote and have some perception of these, or are we informed as they are. So I agree with both of you 100% that you should be informed and you should have an opinion, but I think that has to do with the internal functioning of the FA and not the school. Because if you think the problem now is people are not informed, that's showing that the rules that we have them right now are not working to make sure people get informed.
Rep. Pritchett, and then Block.
Okay, so I'm a little bit confused about speaking aside. This is kind of like a point of information.
Yeah. We'll direct the point of information to me.
As it stands currently, if you abstain, then in effect, you're going to decision it.
Aaron, sure.
So basically, starting off, like if you the definition of abstaining, which I'm going to talk about a little later, is that you can be neutral. You can, like, if you feel that you're comfortable, conflicted with what your decision is, you can abstain. But what you're doing is you're giving consent, saying, yes, I feel that whatever the majority says is right, is the right action. Whether you agree that, you know, certain actions should be taken, that's not, you're not necessarily agreeing with that action, but you're agreeing that, yes, the people who, whatever the majority was made, that's what I agree with.
Point of information, that's how it is on the majority vote. That you just go with whatever is decided, it might be that that was intended, but I think the point we're making is the way it functions right now is that you need 2/3 of voting members present, and so if you abstain, you're not reaching that 2/3 level, and it has the exact same effect when you count the votes, it doesn't matter. So I agree with that should be the intent, but what this is changing is making sure that that intent actually having 3 and 2/3 votes.
Yeah.
So that if you are abstaining on 2/3 vote after this happens, you are going to vote whether it happens, whether it's 2/3 is reached or not. Now if you're abstaining, you're going to vote.
Okay, EVP Mueller.
So I have a genuine question here. I'm not trying to like throw you guys off. So from what Representative Pritchard has just said, what I read here is actually a need to basically like say that we have to have a quorum on 2/3 votes. So why don't we do that?
Well, because right now you do need to have, that's what we're doing. Right now you need to have a quorum on 2/3 vote, but abstaining still counts towards that quorum, and abstaining still counts as invalid. What this is saying is we need to have a quorum of people who actually have to vote.
So I'm going to give the rest of my time, which is like probably 20 seconds, to San Angelo so that we can...
Yeah, because I just clarified what I'm saying.
Yeah. So the current way that it stands, you need a majority of the people present. So, for example, here today we have 27, all of our voting members here. So you would need 18 members present, or 18 members, but yes, in order to pass it. It's just the majority of the people who are here.
There's a bylaw.
Two-thirds majority of the people here. So, with that being said, you can abstain, and it doesn't count towards that added majority. It doesn't change that effect. You still would need 18 people to say yes in order to pass it. What this resolution is doing is necessarily allowing that number of people to say yes to change.
Next is what? Block.
Yeah, so I just want to just kind of clarify a couple of things. It seems that, you know, anytime we make a change to the way that we operate at the assembly, it's very important to consider the long-term ramifications of that. So whatever side you're on, please consider the long-term effects of this resolution, because it's not just our assembly, but it's not just moving forward or not just doing these changes. I think that there's been a lot of talk about the fact that a few people should stay on particular issues, i.e. that you should have the same. I completely agree. But I think that the situation that we have right now is one in which you are able to voice your opinion and vote for your opinion. And I think that's not a really good situation to happen. If you really consider what we have now, which is, like you said, you can vote with the same, I don't think that that's as good as a situation in which you can actually abstain. And I also disagree fundamentally with the premise that no one should ever abstain. Because in a particular case, for example, if you're you should have to vote no on something that you support completely in your conflict of interest. You should be able to say, I'm not going to get
caught
in that abstain, and that actually leads to fairness of the decisions of the assembly of nations.
Yeah.
So if we had 8 votes that required 2/3 of voting members,
yeah,
we had 4, which is 14.
Okay.
What would happen? Would that be tabled to the next meeting, or would that automatically get voted down?
Would that, if you want to take it?
From my interpretation of this motion, basically, if one person, if we say we had 14 people here, that form. If one person abstains, the motion would be tabled. Or one person or more abstains, it would be tabled. If obviously no one abstains, then it would
be determined on question 12 as well.
Even if it was of voting members only according to the not of voting members present, but of voting, like the membership.
If it was of voting members and there were only 14 people here, it couldn't go anyway. It couldn't, like, it would basically, it would essentially be tabled de facto.
Would it be tabled or would it be voted down automatically?
It would be tabled. Next is Rep. Iwoga.
So, Representative Block, you were talking about the idea of abstaining versus voting down to abstention. But I am actually a big opinion, and I think we're nearly touching this, we talked about this in the executive committee, but I'm of the opinion that if we're discussing this change to the bylaw, that is something that everyone here should have a, if everyone here is a stakeholder, that they should have an opinion, and if that's the case, then I would say you shouldn't have an extension, or you should either vote yes or no, and that was not hiding a no vote to abstention. And again, like it's putting the onus on you as a representative to know your bylaws and represent your constituents like in a very transparent way.
Okay. So next is Rep. Cho. We have a whole list of people. Rep. Cho.
Alright, so as of right now, I'm still voting at 10 and extension because I actually don't really, I really don't know what we're talking about right now. So this is what my thoughts are. In respect to like appropriations committee and whatnot, I think that everyone that makes a decision appropriations committee was internally elected by this body, and that I think our opinion does matter, and we spend a lot of time like talking about what the issues are, and the ultimate thing we come up with is, I think the best interest of student members is always keep that in mind. So I can understand where it's like the system of club comes up, and everyone kind of ensures their controversial decisions, where if I was an appropriations committee, I would be uncomfortable saying no, because of all these people, but I would be uncomfortable saying yes, because all my peers are saying no. So I don't know if I'm agreeing with you, but I know if I'm agreeing with Rep. Boris right now, but what exactly does this mean? So does that mean that I could abstain with this number 4, I guess, abstain and there's no consequences to the result of the vote? And I guess that's the question.
Is that a point of information?
I don't think that.
Could you repeat the question?
What am I doing?
Do you want
to
call?
I love that you want to abstain. We're trying to do it right because we're the vote that we're about to take. If you abstain, that's what that is going to be. So what this is saying is that in a two-thirds vote, it's two-thirds of those that actually pass the vote that don't count as abstention. So in order to make this change, right, if you have three people who abstain, you need one less yes vote to get voted. But also the requirements of maybe so we need more and more people voting. So that's a resistance program. I think maybe there's a lot of confusion between what's
going
on and what's the resolution, just because we're both trying to solve the same problem about this weird extension, and we're just going to have that in the
VP Smith.
So I'm going to recognize this as a good place to let you all know right now that a lot of people are not going to have to say who the responsibility is here. I understand where the resolution is coming from. As you all know, I'm here in front of a horrible, horrible person in my community and a business person. And for that reason, I totally understand where this is coming from. However, I do want to echo the sentiments of both Representative Block and Representative Iwoga. When we're considering the long-term effects of what any type of any decision that we make, that's something that is so thoroughly important. And also, as what Representative Iwoga is saying, it is our responsibility as representatives and as a BBE to be thoroughly informed about the issues that we are deciding on. It is our job to also be informed about the government documents. And as if I were to do a poll right now, I can guarantee that less than half the people in this room have completely read the charter of the bylaws. Guarantee, I've been on the system for 4 years. Every year we've had limited people read the documents. So I kind of resent it when I have to come up here and say, no, you can't vote on this today, or do this vote on this, and really do that. It's like, you know, what you're doing. I resent the fact that we have to do that. Now, I personally, I don't want to come off as, you know, I think we've been better than our time doing those things in Canada, blah, 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 but that's probably what it's going to sound like. I think we need to spend a day, an executive session, well, a day. We need to retreat some sort, and we need to sit down, go through our current bylaws, make sure we understand what these concepts are, and not waste the community members' time, who they were integrated, they had resolutions they were supposed to walk through, but they're gone now, not waste their time like this, particularly with this. So I would love to know something, but there's emotional standing, so I just want to, I don't want to call it a question because it's what.
Well, you have to call the amendment to question first. Okay. There's a motion to vote on the amendment, and it's been seconded. Is there any dissent?
I dissent just because if we want to do that, I would withdraw the amendment to allow you to make the motion to table. But if he doesn't want to.
We're voting on the amendment, it sounds like. Okay, I mean, I didn't mean to shut that down, but it's less complicated. Yeah.
If you abstain on this resolution right now, it gets shut down altogether. You're correct. Whereas if this resolution is passed, theoretically speaking, you'd be able to know the meeting and be voted on if people have a more calculated decision.
You can motion to table indefinitely, and it could go to another meeting. If it were voted down, then you could bring it up in, I believe, another form.
So he has to clarify when he tables himself.
Do you want?
I didn't miss the motion because we have to vote on the.
Right, we're voting on the amendment right now, though itself. So okay, everyone, we are voting on VP Desai's amendment. To strike the first, be it therefore resolved, the third, the fourth, the sixth, and the seventh. If you are in favor of strike, and remember that this is a bylaw change, so that if you do abstain, that base, you know, for all intents and purposes, would be a no in the count, but you're still abstaining.
Point of parliamentary procedure, yeah. Does that still apply to an amendment?
The amendment applies to the main motion.
Okay. Did you have a point of... Okay, yeah. Okay, so if you are in favor of the amendment in striking these clauses, please raise your placards. If you are not in favor. Abstentions. So by a vote of 7-13-4, the motion fails. We're going back into debate on the original resolution. What? There's a motion to table before.
Oh my God.
Okay, there's a motion to table indefinitely. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent?
If we can jump to a response, it's one of the things that's suggested here is the ability to go to the executive session and also what we need to discuss there, because this can't actually be passed in executive session. So if you're taking it indefinitely, you're taking it off the table.
Just to clarify what I meant by that is not, in an executive session, we would not be voting on anything. It's for the sake of understanding.
Okay.
Yes. Tabling indefinitely does not require a vote to bring before the assembly.
No. These words are indefinitely.
Okay. So the answer to that is no, it does not. It can be brought up again. What?
Would that be a new resolution?
Okay. It would come up as another resolution. or it could be brought up again. And, okay, so if you are in favor of tabling this resolution...
What? Why? There's
dissent to the motion.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're in favor of tabling the resolution, please raise your placards.
Is this indefinitely?
Yes.
No, it's undecided.
If you're not in favor of tabling, one, two, any abstentions? Wow. One, two. By a vote of 23-2-2, the resolution is tabled indefinitely. We are...
Should we move on to 20?
Yeah. We're going to move on to resolution 20, calling for the hire of an associate dean of LGBTQ outreach.
Did I chair that okay?
Yeah.
I would rather, my point I was going to make was that I'd rather actually vote on this and vote it down. Like we already wasted so much time on it. Also, when I went to SRA, you gave up your point. Rare things would have happened. It only happened once with really nice. Yeah, there was genuine confusion in many simulations, and it doesn't actually mean that, like, you know, you don't necessarily disagree with the resolution, but there are issues with it. And it allowed, as you saw in the case, that where Ulysses was left and down,
okay, we'll talk about it later.
Stated that it could be brought up.
You're going to come back to that situation. Yeah. What? Okay. So, we're moving on to Resolution 20, calling for the hire of an Associate Dean of LGBTQ Outreach. JD, do you want to be added as a co-sponsor to... Okay, great. Okay, so you guys have 2 minutes left. JD Hooray, class of 2014? Yeah. Begin.
Okay, so we discussed this briefly last week. This is calling for the entire association of LGBTQ outreach in the LGBTQ reproductive services, which is a good person. We touched on a lot of needs last week, and I want to re-highlight all of those in particular. Our permanent advisor is a single person who devotes a significant portion of their time to advising, and also to program development and the LGBTQ research center, as we only have one staff member currently.
Right now, we need to be the LGBTQ research center. We run the student officer or co-sponsor or run over 100 events every year, which is a significant amount. And the fact that we don't have a permanent staff position for such a large community of approximately 10% of the Cornell community, we only have one staff person for the entire research center for that community, including that one person that could run an entire research center as well as advisory, which he can't actually vote a significant amount of time. It's a little bit ridiculous for the amount of impact he has on that community.
Okay. Would anyone else like to speak? There's still a little more time.
I was going to ask you, I know you talked with Matt recently about his opinion about why you shouldn't be the advisor and maybe help him with the chair.
So, in the event, Marcella, who's the LGBTQ research center director, in his contract, there's no accountability that he has to advise him. Recently, when I came in as a freshman, 4 years ago, there was an advisor who was David Bell, who was outside the LGBTQ research center. And records were scattered, vulnerability was scattered, because it was in no one's context that they had to be, I guess, advisory to him. And they had to run this program. So a lot of things were lost. And then the next year, we lost a staff member who I think is the position that we're trying to fill right now. And that was one of the hires that happened in 2007 that the hiring freeze happened, so this was 2009 when we lost our staff member, which still hasn't been filled, which is, I know, about 100 or so staff members that we lost. But basically, Haven was moved outside the LGBT center, and it was under the authority of the business. And because of that, things were lost for them, so there was a lot more pressure on the students. Two presidents in a row, freshman and sophomore year, presidents of Haven consecutively switched midwife rooms, and that's the first semester, because of the amount of debt, because of the amount of responsibility that they had to do. Haven and violence in the organization sort of fell apart, and it's taken 2 years to kind of rebuild that back and to get, I guess, our funding back and to get the benefits that we want to have, and the impact that we want to have on campus back. And to sort of consolidate that under the LGBT Resource Center. Because right now, Haven really is the programming branch of the LGBT Resource Center. So we really don't want a external person coming in who really has no connection, no responsibility, no accountability to come and benefit. And we really don't want someone who isn't connected to the Resource Center to come in and put us back to where we were. My question.
Hey, thanks. And I'm sorry earlier, I mispronounced with a co-sponsor named Jade. Hooray. Sorry about that earlier. Oh, it's JD. That's what it
is. Hey, a new friend.
Someone told me I mispronounced your name. The end of the meeting, JD. Thank you. Would you like to say something before I move on? Okay. It's actually more for JD. JD, but.
Well, her husband was today, but I'm a kid. No, I really want to speak to her more about, I know everybody's going to speak more about some of the.
Is that a joke?
But I'm going to speak to her more about the functional. What we met in the public the other day to discuss this a bit more. We met in the public the other day to discuss this a bit more. And it's, I think everybody really needs to take the time to kind of recognize the fact that this is a significant population, a significant amount of the population in this campus. And even if you do not identify them, what is wrong with me today? As part of the community, a lot of people still take part in a lot of the events that they go on. They interact with a lot of people every day. We are just a part of the campus. And I know that especially people a lot of time last week about, you know, revolving around is there money for this position or other positions we could get against this position we could just do. That shouldn't really be the argument here. The argument here is we recognize, as a citizen, we recognize that we don't just can't afford individuals to help serve the needs of this community. And it is our job to make sure that those needs have been communicated to the higher level of administration. So that is what we are doing today. If other representatives feel like other administrators or legal entities to address those issues, I advise you to talk to your constituents, get it together, and come up with something that you should do. And we were urged to do that by multiple people on this front. So now it's our chance to start out with this issue.
Motion to
accept
the meeting.
Okay, we're going to extend. I mean, is there any second?
Second.
Okay. Okay. So moving on to Rep. Kerr. Sorry, Rep. Locke. Oh, left. Rep. Kerr.
The only thing I can mention is that this is a great work today. Also, just to emphasize the point, I think, from experience, I'm working with MNED right now. We're planning to run through the resolution about that in a week or two. And there's a lot of added stress because there's just not enough support from any of it. You know, somebody whose job description includes being the advisor to Haven can take up a lot of the work in terms of making the contacts, taking the time to organize events, you know, securing funding. This is work that is now in place on students when other organizations have these resources. So we're universally putting this organization at a disadvantage compared to the 5 years by not making sure that they have an advisor.
with limited time. I don't know how long this is going to be. This lengthy. Okay, and I'm done.
VP Lukashevitz.
I just wanted to state my support to the resolution. I think it's incredibly important that that you guys have an advisor that can give the appropriate amount of work, advice and work and resource to you guys. And I just want to say that passing this resolution is presenting to the administration that this is a need of our community, which it definitely is, and that they will then work with you guys and figure out exactly what that means to the person, that we should be voting based on whether we think that this is extra burden on the administration, because it's our task to show the administration what this needs to be.
Rep. Marshall. VP Desai.
So I make a very quick note. I know that last week I talked a lot about bylaw funding, because that was kind of what the discussion was centered on at the time, and also what bylaw expertise and bylaw sitting at the table. With that being said, I don't think this is a resolution that is strictly about the difference between the other bylaw funded organizations. I think it's more about the place of the LGBTQ community on campus, the support network that this administration provides for them, and the experience they have as students at Cornell University, and what this assembly says about where that is right now and where it needs to be. So while allowing bylaw funding is an aspect of this, so it's important to go to that which is the only thing, and that is not the message of the resolution we are trying to send. That being said, I support the resolution for all of the aforementioned reasons, and I call the question.
Second.
The resolution's been called to question, and it's been seconded. Is there any... What was your dissent?
How many more people are on the speaker's list?
One.
One more person is me?
No, you're not on it.
Why?
You didn't tell me.
Okay.
Yeah. So... We're going to vote on the resolution since there's dissent. If you are in favor of voting on this resolution right now and ending discussion, please raise your placards. If you are not in favor and you want to continue discussing, any abstentions? So by a vote of 21-2, we're going to vote on this resolution. There's a motion to roll call. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? So Chelsea, when you get the chance.
What? Benassi?
Yes.
Bezia?
Yes.
Regan?
Yes.
Chen?
Yes.
Chen?
Yes.
Circle?
Yes.
Desai?
Yes.
Rockford?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Dimitri?
Yes.
Europa?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Lee? Lovely? Lukashevich?
Yes.
Marshall? Mueller?
Yes.
Mueller?
Yes.
Pritchett?
Yes.
Delco?
No.
Nick?
Yes.
Defenda?
Yes.
By a vote of 22-1-0, resolution 20-F. I'm going to call the meeting. The time is now 6:36, and I call this, and I adjourn this meeting. Call this meeting to an end. Something, just end it.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.